supervising the operations of this office has given a message that I believe illustrates and explains in a most effective way what we are all about and why we are doing things the way we do. And so, without any further explanation from my part,
message, Bob, about the Thursday midnight broadcast. I hope this works into a more permanent slot for you. I'll be listening with my finger on the record button. And I guess it was bound to happen, this disruption in your schedule after the network started toying with Twin Peaks rescheduling. Obviously an echo effect to the Church of the Subgenius broadcast scheduling. Wish you well, and I'll put my ear up to the radio in about 30 hours. I can hardly wait. Bye-bye.
Hi, Bob. Chris. Just to remind you, war sucks. Once again, it's Chris and the dirty cliches of war.
The Allies are getting ready to retake the Wake City.
A couple more scuds went thud in Israel overnight. No injuries or damage reported.
Effective weapon.
Their kill probability.
There will be war.
Missiles are used. The use of chemical weapons and war in the Gulf will begin very soon. Gloomy prediction. Israeli occupied territories.
I'm not sure what's going to happen, but
terrorists.
Two gasoline bombs, the Gulf crisis, 100,000 protesters beginning to demonstrate
bombs and rockets and missiles
decimated or destroyed.
A Rambo Hollywood style of success.
Indeed, the sanctions could have worked.
It's a tragic development. Military machine destroyed.
Saddam would not have moved.
That the Arab world is not going to be the same.
The blow up in the Gulf. There's no way in which anything in the Persian Gulf can possibly replicate the political strength of what I would call the Indo-Soviet system of American politics.
It does look as though this is for real.
Up to three missiles have hit Tel Aviv.
Significant arms control treaty. The continued testing and expansion of nuclear weapons is ludicrous. In a time when we should be healing the planet rather than moving to destroy it.
The Cold War is over, but there's still a vestige of Cold War mentality living on within the Soviet Union and the United States, and powers such as France, Britain, and China continue to test new nuclear weapons.
There is also a direct correlation between the environment, nuclear testing, and the Persian Gulf crisis.
It's going to kill us one way or another, whether it's through Persian Gulf War or through just oil being burned and a continued dependency on fossil fuels.
We don't have time to wait. We don't have time to wait. Iraq is apparently making good on a threat to destroy Kuwaiti oil installations. The medical implications of hostilities in the Gulf.
Depend on
the types of weapons used, the theater of war, and of course the duration of hostilities.
Come out of your holes or get killed in them. Baghdad Radio's message from the boss is still the same. Fight on. And while there were two more scud thuds on Israel, Jews and Arabs prayed together for peace.
The people in Sudan are facing starvation, and the conflict in the Gulf is making matters worse.
The innocent people are more than a million of terribly wounded or dying civilians, innocent civilians.
Western military expertise, precision weapons, bombs out ruin, biological weapons.
Unbearably unstomachable.
The everyday theatrics of war.
Unbearably unstomachable. The home video war. All of it quite impersonal.
It is now a matter of life.
Yeah, hi, Bob. It's Paul. I don't know. I just heard the show tonight, and I don't know. I've got a few reactions. What the heck's going on? I mean, all you guys are doing is stirring the sticks of the great unwashed, it seems, talking about Michael Lynch and some television show. I don't know. I'm trying to exercise media ecology, Bob. I've given away my television and taken down the satellite dish, and I don't go to movies too much anymore. I guess the next thing will be to get rid of the telephone altogether, but I'm trying to maintain some link to the holy offices, of course, and I do listen to the show on occasion. Welcome back. I'm glad you're on the air. I was listening tonight. Well, your show started the 14 thing, yeah, the fourth month, the 11th day, so it was the first of the 14th show, but, and then of course it ended on the 12th of the fourth month, so that's a 48, and there's your 22, and your 4, and your 8, and tetrad times 12, and all of that. But, I'm just wondering, what's the talking about some television show all the time, Bob? I mean, is Bob running out of things to do? Bob. Is Bob running out of things to say? Bob. Is Bob running out of people to have call? Bob. What's going on? All you want to do is talk television. Well, looks like I'm going to have to buy a TV or something. I don't know. Anyway, might be off the air for good, which wouldn't hurt me one bit. Bye. Oh, and the owl, the significance of the owl, of course, is coming from where I am. We're still watching you, Bob. I'm up here at the Osgoode Hall Law School, OHLS, owls. That's right, and we're watching.
Bob, I was going to say that it's so good your show has returned. Now that Pandora's box has been opened, the last fairy has finally come out. And what was the last fairy's name from Pandora's box? Hope. Thanks for the hope, Bob.
Hi, Bob. It's the man from space. You can, well, I haven't got my number yet, but I want to play this message on the air. Let's just get George Bush out of here. Get out of here, George. We got a poem dedicated to subgeniuses everywhere. Redressing of ballots. Redressing of ballots. Merit of the ballots. Is it not to say that dressing has become more erotic than undressing? Who is it to say that the creature of the dawn is a misguided hobgoblin? For it is thee that say nay, as thou art, hath done therein myriadic days of melancholy auspiciousness. O mistress of the dark, cling to my outer skeletorous shell, which dances in the jaws of death. Be free, be you, be glee, relinquish me, for the dawn be not a friend, but a brother I love ever so dearly. Please broadcast this message. This is the man from space again, Bob. And, this one's dedicated to you. Fooling with solitude. pecking at the pawn. Does he bleed? No! For their beaks are too dull. Time to get up. Brand new day. Sun still shines exact same way. Will I go to work or just play? The answer is at your disposal, Bob. Slack or backtrack.
Hi, Bob. It's Tim here. I guess you know by now they've canceled our favorite show for another couple of months. Apparently, it comes on in July. June or July is a two-hour special where they wrap up. My thought is the government stepped in, and they're really concerned about all this Blue Book stuff still. Any ideas on this or opinions? Please call me because I'm in dire straits. Bye.
Bob, this is Ray here. I just called up Global tonight. It's Wednesday, Twin Peaks night, right? Well, apparently the videotape was lost in transit, they tell me. What do you mean lost? Touché. You've been at work again, huh? Back to the underworld where you belong. Back to the Bardo, Touché. Let us have Twin Peaks again. Bye. Bob, there is hope for CKLN. This is Ray calling again. Listen to this. This is CKLN Wednesday night, 3 in the morning. Actually, 3:30 in the morning.
It's all experienced by light on acid, right? And many people experience it, various mystical experiences over the last 20 years. Now,
hi, Bob and Connie. Kate and I would like to know what your take is on the color burgundy. Is there a conspiracy attached to the color burgundy? For instance, the area where we're living, every other car is burgundy colored. Help.
Hi, Bob. It's Tim. Bob, B-O-B, the Beasts of Beasts, or the Beast of Babylon. Babylon, of course, being a fool's paradise and a euphemism for the West. Vis-a-vis the Book of Revelations. Praise Bob.
I'm running. Ooh, I'm running, baby. So I'm going to leave some more Red Book notes, number 3. I've since completed it as of, last couple months, about a month ago. I'm going to start at 300. Spend economic recession studying history. People who live the longest are conductors. The seven sisters are oil companies. January 91 will be a sad month. Burroughs was continuing the work of Finnegan's Wake. The spiritual ain't what it used to be. The AIDS virus is going through a 28-year cycle. Myths are used to control the credulous masses. Global conspiracies succeed by creating controlled environments. When mythologies are stripped away, primitive truth becomes apparent, and only then can real science begin. A polarized mythology is like a goldfish bowl. No matter how cleverly the fish chooses his direction within the bowl, he can never escape it in such a fashion. No matter how cleverly he adapts to the environment of the bowl's medium, example, popular mythologies. Whoever moves the bowl moves him in a corresponding direction. Fraud. British democracy. Massive vote fraud. The real me, the me who is all of me and stays all of me's, is on the death plane watching and listening to this me who writes these words for you. Is it still possible to transform people by writing a book? Have you yet seen the real horror? Apocalypse Now was just a metaphor. Reality is worse than any fantasy. The green monkeys are real. They live within us. The personal does not exist. Neither does the political. What exists? The dentist. some when I was a dankling cockroach. Your friends are simultaneously your enemies. There is only interpretation. Slack is detachment. Detachment is not happiness. Most of the poets I know, in particular the language types, are dead. Fuck it. Everything is ego sometimes. The hidden ground is silence. We live in a time where nostalgia is right on. Normalcy. Words. What else? In the age of dice, it's supposed to be freezing rain tomorrow. I believe that this world of tables and chairs and windows is the spiritual world. Once freed from obligation, generosity should follow. Most people are asleep, and yet they move up.
You know, Kate and I were just thinking, who are the best representatives around of the White Lodge? And your names came up. How about a visit up to the country again? We have your favorite food up here. Really? So come up anytime you like. We've been going back all the other episodes, finding out the key. We know what is happening in the last couple of hours. Anyways, share it with us or not. Come on up. Tim and Kate would like to see you. Good night.
Bob, the conspiracy has taken away my slack. What can I do? Some fascist, arrogant asshole has taken away my slack. Bob rules, okay.
Any of geniuses that want to call up David Rockefeller and Henry Kissinger into how they make up the new world government can call them at home. David Rockefeller is at 914-631-1634. And Henry Kissinger is at 212-759-7919.
Yeah, Bob, there's no place that you can run and hide. This is Kent. You want the number here? It says 657-9056. It's a phone booth on St. Clair. You around, pal? You want...
Got some
what?
Stuff for you, man.
$10? Hey, where's the...
I heard you shuffling in there, you...
$10?
Hey, I gave you the code.
So you're just around the corner, eh?
Yeah.
Okay, come on over.
Well, I was there already, but you don't answer the door.
Well, I'll answer it now. Now that you've been cleared. Okay.
Okay, I'll be right over.
Yeah,
bye. Okay.
Please broadcast this message. Man from space calling Bob. Man from space calling Bob. Man from space calling Bob. Bob, taking your show off the air from me is like leading a horse away from water after he started to drink. For all these people that deny the existence of Bob, hopping into the rune of molecular mishaps in the advent of their melancholy menu of wine and lamb, running hither and thither today, requesting affirmation from Bob, for their metaphysical infidelity is unscrupulous. In its intentions, for these wanking wombats greedily grabbing for the greasy gonads of God, you only have to call out a sacred solar mantra. For that untimely soybean burger from Bob. Hold the pickles.
Bob,
Of course, it's suit and tie time. The Queen wants everybody to wear a tie, a noose around their necks. I think that we could study the language of the tie as being a noose around everyone's neck. That's the new emperor's invisible clothing, is everyone else wears a tie but him. So he can grab a hold of you and give you a very hot environment, and a cold environment as well, if you don't fall in line. But that's a top down, and that's full of elephant traps and paradoxes, so we'll stay out of that. Anyway, we're going to start with the effect, and we're going to work backwards.
Oh, Wayne. Are we on? Okay, Wayne. I can't hear you, Wayne.
There we are. Okay.
Okay. There's something very odd going on, Wayne. Not just with the sound. Can you hear me, Wayne?
I can hear you.
Yeah, I can't hear you. But anyway, so let me talk to the people.
There we go. Okay, yeah. I'm in full stereo now.
Something very strange going on. My headphones are burning my ears, or my ears are burning my headphones. I don't understand this. There's little, you know, soft pads, but they're burning me. Now, the only thing I can sort of speculate on the cause of this.
Smoke coming out of your ears, Bob.
Yeah, there's something happening here, and I think the only reason is the only thing that I've done different before any other show, you know, this show. The only thing I've done different, I've never done this before, is that tonight Connie and I made love just before the show, and you and Haley, Wayne, probably smelt the spermatozoa on my pants when I came in. But I'm just wondering, is having sex, you know, causing my ears to blow out through the electric discharge estate? I don't know. That's the only new thing that could have happened to change the circumstances here. Oh, anyways, what is Bob, Wayne? That's the question. What is Bob?
Haley, do we have a fire extinguisher in the station? We better make sure.
Yeah, I mean, geez, it's just very uncomfortable. But I'll never do that again. Connie, have to wait till Friday. All right? So what is Bob?
At least after the show.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing is, what is Bob? I got a definition. I came up with a definition. I think we can handle it.
Hey, what is Bob?
It goes like this. The theater and book worlds are merely mirrors. The pop and television worlds are merely echoes. But my, that's me, Bob, but my mixed corporate media mega micro project achieves Manipian tactility. Manipian tactility, those two words never been said before, Wayne, on the air.
What do they mean?
Well, Manipian is satirical, right? And tactile is the essential nature of the discarnate state. So I'm satirizing the essential nature of the discarnate state. Manipian tactility.
Manipian from manipulation or...
No, Manipian from Manippus, the writer about 220 B.C.
Oh, that Manippus.
Yes. So anyways, Manipian tactility, that requires a little bit of perceptual-conceptual relationship to work on what it means, but I assure you I've been doing it for a long time. All right, maybe the very fact that I'm doing Manipian tactility discarnate is interfacing with physical tactility, which I experienced earlier tonight, so maybe that's what's causing this burning sensation. Okay, Wayne.
I wonder if the listeners are feeling burning sensation in their ears as well.
Yeah, maybe once I tell them this, they did. Okay, they got to have headphones on, though. Anyways, the topic tonight, of course, is the October surprise. Finally, one of Mae Brussels' stories has hit the big time, and everybody's running around getting the piece of the action, but we're going to clear it up tonight. Who can clear it up? The Exes. The Exes have access to all time and space, and they can tell you what happened, what's going to happen in general. You get ready, Wayne. We're going to go right into it. The Exes tape. Now, what we're going to hear first for about 2 minutes is... dialogue I had with the Exes on September 13th, 1989, a year and a half ago, and Barbara Honecker's book, October Surprise, had come out a few months before, April, May or so, and I was interested in talking to the Exes about that book, so I asked them, how heavy is this book? And we'll play about 2 minutes of this, then we'll go into an update reading after that. There'll be a pause, Wayne, so you can go ahead with the new... with the first slot.
Okay, here we go.
All right, now there's a new book called October Surprise by Barbara Honecker. It came out in April, published by Tudor Publishing Company in New York City. Can you focus on that book, October Surprise?
Yes, we have that, yes.
Now, the
Beg your pardon?
Interesting.
Yeah, now the author worked with Mae Brussel the year before Mae died, and I'm sure used much of Mae Brussel's information and collated and coordinated with what she was getting through her own sources. Is there something in that book that... something she's not aware of that has more... and how it relates to Iran Gate, or is the book the full story?
The book is the full story.
That they were going to stop the release of the hostages so that Carter would not win and that Reagan would get in, right?
Yes.
And George Bush was involved in that.
Bush was involved.
And Casey and all those characters that are named in the book.
Yes.
So if will that book... will the magnitude of that indiscretion by them ever become a public scandal?
Not this year, but next year, yes.
Yeah, he will get a second term.
And yet he will get a second term.
And what is it in the modern world that makes the White House and that level of presidency impervious to such big scandals?
In actuality, it does not. But what does happen is... that it will be denied, of course it will be denied, until some people begin to start digging even more deeply because of that book. At the moment, that book is called a fringe book.
Yes.
No proofs exist. However, certain people will come to the forefront and say that, yes, that part of the book is correct.
Okay, so that's the exes talking to me about the October surprise on September 13th, 1989. I spoke again to the exes on April 26th, 1991, a few weeks ago. And this is the update, Wayne. This is about 10 or 11, 12 minutes long. This will go into an interesting angle that we haven't heard about around the October surprise.
This right after this on the tape?
Yeah, you'll just let it run. There's a silent spot, and the next part comes up.
Maybe you could, for somebody that's attempting to get a warm-up on MediaFast 92, I don't read the newspapers, don't watch TV, and I haven't really been too aware of, other than I did see the Globe and Mail article about Bush denying the allegations. Yes. What else has been in the major media, and what has come to light in terms of the mass...
Well, what the exes predicted has come true. They said in 1991 it would become a big story. And it started off on April 15th where Gary Sick, National Security Advisor to President Carter in the 70s, wrote an op-ed editorial in the New York Times saying his research over the last 2 years, probably sparked by Barbara's book, and he had access to some people in the Carter administration. So he got in touch with them, and they confirmed what she said in her book. So he wrote an article saying he at first was skeptical, but now he's beginning to believe it. So that sparked off the first thing. Then the next night, April 16th, PBS on Frontline ran an hour documentary on Gary Sick's research plus other people with some of the witnesses he had dug up testifying on the TV show. Therefore, you know, throwing great credibility into the October surprise scandal.
Did they touch bases at all with George Best, or has he come into the
George
picture?
Best?
Or was that the Mr. Razeev, Agent X, that Barbara Honegger did the interview with a few years ago?
Which one? No, who is Mr. X?
Wasn't he identified as...
No, was Mr. X on the PBS show?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or has he... come to...
No, they've got five witnesses. Mr. X is only one. They had five witnesses on PBS,
mm-hmm.
and Gary Sick.
But he was one of them.
I don't know.
Oh.
Okay. So the... I didn't see the show. I don't watch this stuff. I'm on a media fast myself. I'm just doing this as a public service.
Right.
You know, I don't... As you'll see when you hear the reading from the exes, once you understand that, then you can just ignore all this stuff. But you ask what's been going on. I keep track of what the details of information distribution, but I don't listen to the content. The next thing was after the PBS Frontline, Gary Sick's his book came out, and then a week or so later, the former president of Iran, Bonnie Sutter. His book wanted to be distributed in the United States, and he wanted to do a book tour, but the State Department wouldn't let him. Then the State Department later in that week, this is after the Frontline show, let him come into the States and do his tour, and on the weekend Bush had a heart attack. Okay,
right. Yep.
That was the weekend Bush had to withdraw the hospital.
That's right.
Because
too much excitement to get the public sympathy up for
And Tetrad Management. Now the Benny Satter, then he could tour around the United States. He was on Nightline, apparently. He was on a lot of TV shows, and so was Gary Sick, and so a lot of media coverage of this has been built up. And then I guess the peak was yesterday on Phil Donahue. They had Benny Satter, Gary Sick, one of the hostages who couldn't believe this whole scenario, one of the original hostages, and I don't know who. I don't know if Barbara Honecker was on. Of course, I didn't watch it, so I just heard about this. And the audience, I didn't understand or really believe the scenario and put down Gary Sick and President Bonnie Satter on Phil Donahue. So that's been a big story.
I understand one of the pilots that actually flew Casey Bush, Brennecke, and the rest of them over to Paris has come forward now after having somebody attempt to take his life. He's come forward now and said exactly, you know, what...
Where did that happen?
I read that on... just gave you that computer news network.
That's not his tour last summer. This is something more recent.
Yeah, it's very recent, just like last couple of weeks.
Okay, so they're all coming out, and the experts predicted they all come out, and the pressure's on Bush, so let's see what's going to happen. And let's find out what did happen. So just let it run, and it'll be silent, and then it'll go into the next thing. And this was... this interview was done April 26, 1991.
There was a Frontline PBS special on the October surprise, which is pointing the finger at Bush. This was on April 16th, and there was some coverage in the major newspapers about it. Is this the October surprise story that the EG said would come out in 1991?
Yes.
Is much more going to come from it?
Yes.
But Bush will ride it out?
Almost, yes. He ride this out.
Was George Bush in Paris in October 1980 organizing the delay of the release of the hostages until after Reagan was in?
Not personally in that city, but that he had operatives, yes.
So he organized that?
Yes.
What could he be... Is that treasonous what he did?
Absolutely not. It was the best thing that could be done. It was very clever. You see, it is not being seen from the perspective of those who have thought this out. To say, hold off giving the hostages back until the election is complete.
In exchange for arms.
In exchange for arms. It appears very callous. It appears very callous. But in actuality, the Iranians themselves were playing hardball. They were making no decisions other than holding the
hostages.
They were intractable. They were accepting no overtures. None. Now, what was done, and this is to George Bush's credit, his view was, give the Iranians the impression that they are in control. And here is how it's done. We will say to them, hold the hostages, which they are doing in any event, until the election is over, so that you can make us look good. The Iranians bit that. Oh, they swallowed that hook, line, and sinker. They said, now, we have that situation created where they owe us. Now, how can we capitalize on that? Now, Bush and certain others did this very well. They said, what do you want? Do you want armaments? And the Iranians said, oh, yes, please, because armament supplies have been drying up.
Was that said after they were elected?
No, that was said before.
Yeah.
Now, what was done, and it was brilliant, I understand it. It gave the Iranians the belief that they were, in actuality, manipulating on a worldwide basis. They were not. They were, we assure you, duped into letting go of hostages for arms. A good trade, we would suggest. But what was also created by this was Bush's other shoe, which was, if you do this again, if you do try to take hostages, particularly American hostages, we will, and we have the power to do it, make sure that you have no more arms, except those which you would be able to smuggle in small amounts into the country. You will have no spares. You will have no backup. And we will let it be known that there will be a total, utter embargo created as that one that you were experiencing. And the Iranians, they were suffering, so they believed, from a lack of arms. And here was an opportunity. Consider what they had. They had hostages. That's all they had. But they could trade them for the belief that they were in control and for arms. And Bush, in a brilliant stroke, made sure that they would swallow this hook, line, and sinker. And they did. Now, the way that it get told, there would be some saying, how callous. But the full story come out. The Iranians were duped royally, would be the best description.
And this will come up before the 92 election?
Oh, yes, indeed.
And Bush, therefore, will win the debate in image?
Absolutely.
All right.
And what did the Iranians end up with? What did they have, in truth? Modern arms? No.
So, all right, now we go into the Iran-Contra scandal. The EG said that Reagan initiated that to get the new round of hostages out, right?
Yes. Reagan initiated, on the advice of Bush and those surrounding. Reagan put this cleverly done. But realize, Reagan initiated. But Reagan didn't think. It was not his thinking. It was his initiation. He was the one that said, this is to be done.
This is cleverly done.
Mm.
Yeah, that's why on July 13, 1985, I think it was the day of the Live Aid concert, Reagan went into the hospital. And some research shows that was the weekend while he was in hospital that Bush came and proposed this idea.
Exactly.
And he was actually, Bush was president at that point. He'd taken over while Reagan was in hospital.
Yes.
So while he was in the hospital, Bush proposed it, Reagan agreed, and then then the Iranians felt they could blackmail Reagan. Remember that?
Indeed so. But the point is, that was what they were led to believe. They were led to believe that they had power. And all that was necessary was to push this. Rather, the problems of the situation than letting it out that the United States had totally and completely duped the Iranians. It was better to hide certain things than let it be known.
Right. Now, the EGs told me that many people were murdered when the Iran-Contra scandal started to surface in 86 and 87. What about the people who lost their lives and got caught in the crunch of this scandal and the previous deals?
No, there were other ramifications in here. You have to understand that the United States, they're not fools. They're not easily drawn into something. There are brilliant thinkers involved in this. Brilliant.
Yes. There's an example, Richard Pearl. The people we see on TV, are they some of these brilliant thinkers?
Yes, they are.
Hmm?
Yes.
They're on the CNN show Crossfire often.
Yes.
A lot of those people. So they're known, some of these.
Yes. Well, the point is, what has been disturbing the United States has been for the past 10 years is the continual destabilization of the Mideast. The reason that they put arms into Saddam Hussein's hands was to put a balance against that which existed with Iran.
Yes.
Now, even to the point that distastefully, with great distaste, the United States supplied arms to that which they knew long before was a despot. They knew it, that they had, because of all of that which was there to be balanced, and to give even that despot, and to give arms. The United States knew it would come down to a showdown sometime. They knew this.
With Hussein.
With Hussein. They believed, at one particular point, that he would attack Saudi Arabia. Well, that's why the United States is so heavily armed Saudi Arabia. Make sure there was a balance of power here.
Yeah, they started that in the early 80s.
Yes. Well, it was not expected until 2 to 3 years ago that Kuwait would be a target. So therefore certain things were done to strengthen Kuwait. But Kuwait let itself down. It did not expect that Hussein would go against his word. Until a few days before the attack, Hussein was saying how he would not ever do this. And they believed him. The United States knew he would. And they knew that should he move, it would be necessary to reinforce Saudi Arabia so that Saudi Arabia could then move into attack formation against Iraq. But however, it was one of the other scenarios was brought into play. What has been shown is that the United States is stronger than even its ability to supply arms.
Okay, stop the tape, Wayne. Okay. All right, ready, Wayne? Okay, that was, I don't feel I'm on. We're on? Okay. That was Talking to the Axis, myself, April 26, 1991. Now, the guy that the Axis speak through, his name's Michael, he's totally taken over and possessed, so he's kind of dreaming during the hour-long interview with the Axis. So what's always interesting is that when Michael comes out of being possessed by the Axis, he gives the dream experience he's had,
right,
which often has a lot of content or interesting scenes that he sees, but he doesn't know why he's seeing it. It's just my questions evoke these dream images. So,
but what's really striking is the change of the tone of voice too. His voice totally changes. You can pick up some similarities in the tonal quality, but it's really.
You mean you've heard him before? You're talking about.
Yeah, I've heard him coming out of it, and
previous readings we've done.
Yep.
Yeah, they'll notice it tonight when they hear Mike is totally different. Yeah, his body is totally taken over and controlled by the Axis. That's the only way they can communicate to me in the form they're in right now. So Mike goes on for about 5 or 7 minutes. It's very interesting what he saw of the hostage crisis, the Iranian stuff and all that, and also why we're doing this tonight. So let's go into...
So he's getting mental pictures of all this is going on.
He's sleeping on the job. He's sleeping on... You find out what he dreamt, and it gives you new extra information. So this is his conscious position. The Axis have left.
some of the things that George Bush has done behind the scenes are, he's had to grit his teeth and say, I can't let the cat out of the bag. I'll have to take the heat. And that's what they knew from the beginning. They said, you're going to have to take the heat. It's not a hindsight brilliance, let me assure you. It's a brilliance that was planned. The Iranians were totally and completely suckered.
Because, that was planned for
yeah.
that.
Oh, yeah.
Once the hostages were taken.
Uh-huh. But, you see, they let all of the hostages go at once. They didn't bargain for them individually.
Yes.
They could have spread it across a length of time. And that would have been trade one person for 100,000 guns or 100,000 rounds of ammunition and rocket launches. Now, Bush and his group, with the president's approval, got them all out at once. And they were sitting around saying to themselves, they bought it. They bought it. They bought it. How?
They couldn't be so lucky.
How the hell? They bought it. Wow. Great. And I know people think there's going to be heat off it. Don't tell. I hope it never gets out. It did get out. And then now they're getting the heat.
Right.
And on history's perspective, it's going to be shown that they did exactly the right thing. As callous as it sounds from one aspect, it was one great big American con game. And we're talking about the Americans learning from the confidence tricks and everything in that line. That's why this was the greatest scam they pulled on the Iranians than they ever thought they could ever pull.
So Bush is going to be considered a great president in history.
In history, he's going to be remembered for other things. He's got other things coming up. He's got some good things coming up.
Both the foreign policy, both the enemy is.
But that one will be looked at by people from another perspective, rather than saying, "Hey, this is callous, holding it off until the election, just to make Bush make Reagan look good." It did make Reagan look good, but at the same time, behind it, hey, they were going to get the man back, and they were going to get votes, and they're going to pass off some junk to the Iranians. And the Iranians are going to get the feeling that they are influencing world affairs because they just pushed down the Shah and all that sort of thing. And there were a bunch of, as one official in the government at that time, the American government, looked at them and at the Iranians and said, they're a bunch of absolute horses' asses.
You heard that?
Yeah, I heard that, yeah. You can't treat them like horses' asses because right now they're doing things that they we want to get out of. But this whole thing of how they just hoodwinked the Iranians. Now, if you're going to put that on your show, you are going to get an awful lot of good feedback on that. People are going to start saying,
The Bush stuff.
I can
put that on?
You put the thing about how the were the Iranians totally and completely suckered?
You mean put in what your impressions are, or the original reading?
Put in the original reading, you know.
Because the audience is prepared to look at Bush as a bad guy.
Sure, but what happens if it says maybe he's got a little more smarts?
Yeah.
Which
I want to get them to realize that's the tetrad in the complexity of government today.
Yeah.
This simple journalistic finger pointing is so limited.
Yeah, because. George Bush is going to be remembered as a very good president, even though he put the war situation, etc. It wasn't that he gambled. He knew a lot more than people were saying. He knew a lot. He was head of the CIA, for crying out loud. You don't get to be head of the CIA by being a dummy. And when he moved into the vice president's position, he had more power as vice president than anybody's had before, and
because of what he knew
and how he could apply it,
and also Reagan couldn't think,
and Bush was not that they disliked each other, but Bush's mind would work at 100 miles an hour, and there's Reagan going along at 35. I'm thinking that's the speed limit, you know.
Yeah, Bush is a Gemini, so you have a fast mind.
Oh, fast,
Now, did Carter know that they were doing that? Because this Carter stuff is coming.
Carter didn't know much. Carter was not that...
Well, he said he's one of the worst presidents in history.
Yeah, he was... He was... hoping for a world that didn't exist.
Yeah.
Never existed, and...
Small town. He actually was like Reagan, for a small town world.
Yeah, he was a small town world.
Yeah.
Okay, Wayne. So I put on that last little cute part where we're telling everybody we're going to get a big reaction, so everybody be so self-conscious, we won't get a big reaction, right? So we can drop the topic and move on to other things. No. Let's go into some other things that relate to it. How about after hearing this sobering sermon from the Exus about our responsible understanding of tetrad management, and let's just forget about the finger pointing and realize that, Wayne, if you were vice president potential in 1980, you would have done the same thing, Wayne.
Still doesn't improve my image of George Bush.
Well, that's the problem, Wayne. You're rather thick. Your mind's going to 35 miles an hour, and you think that's a speed limit. Okay, well, but
it's going in a different direction, maybe.
In other words, what you're saying is speaking volumes for all those people who are feeling the same thing. I don't give a damn what they have to say, Bob. I hate George Bush.
That's right.
I don't care how brilliant he is. Okay, I'll just read a little supplement to that.
Well, there's no denying his brilliance. There's no denying his intelligence and his devious, but it's only a tribute to his profound evilness, in my opinion.
You Gnostic, you Manichaean jerk. You'll never learn, Wade. I told you this reading, when you heard it, will send you in the other direction. You and Hans Bergschmidt and a whole bunch of them. Dave Emery, who else? Rick Lines, all of you know. But no, you guys are stubborn, and you're going to stay in your ground and keep pointing your fingers all the way through the 90s. Okay, what did they mean that Bush would be known for other things? I just want to read from, his image. This October surprise will just come and go and won't cause any big deal. But what will he be known for really is a real change in the American foreign policy. And I'll just read a script from the Exus about this. They say, Bush will influence international policy. All of the previous, let's say, 50 years of American policy has been based on the fact that the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Okay, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So, the Exus tell us that we can't expect a sudden shift from this belief. Nonetheless, expect that President Bush will push to make this belief obsolete. Do not expect that the United States will cozy up to the Syrians more than they have to, and that across the next 2 years there will be a split between Syria and the United States because of Syria's moves towards Israel. Now, this was said 3 or 4 months ago. We already saw that this week, the split between Syria and the United States. Now, I'll tell you one person we'll probably hear from near the end of the show, the one person who's going to gloat because the Exus agreed with him, and that's Dublin. Dublin's sitting there saying, I said this about Bush. I'm the only one. I knew that he'd be a great president. And Dublin is probably going to be right.
Well, as far as presidents go, and as far as what the responsibilities and the job of a president is...
Do I look evil, Wayne? Do I look evil? I'm looking at you.
Society. Hey, there's also horns coming up from...
Yeah, my ears are burning. I got Connie's sperm all over me. Okay, what were you saying?
Well, I mean, it's part and parcel of the job, right?
What is? Being brilliant?
No.
But being evil?
Yeah.
Well, that's where we get into the principle of mixed corporate media tetrad management. Traditionally,
what's the whole structures that's surrounding that whole thing? That it's part of the whole thing that presidency is involved in. I mean, how can you have a good president?
Well, the goods are irrelevant. He has to manage the goods. So you can't have a good president. But what? Let me just tell you how to look at it, is that in the past we always had, you always had the punishment fit the seriousness of the crime, all right? Big crime, big punishment. Small crime, small punishment. Well, tetrad management does a reverse, and it's been like this for 30, mm-hmm. well, 20 years, that now the crime must fit the punishment. In other words, the beef that must be implemented to all of us, the punishment for engaging in this complex society and being discarnate and also hardware people at the same time, a very schizophrenic situation. The punishment we all take as global citizens or solar citizens is that we have to take this force that comes through the disservices of this interplay of all the media, mixed corporate media. So you call that the punishment. So you'll have, the punishment has to come in at a certain intensity. So if you're doing some crime, whether you snatch a purse or rip off billions of dollars, depending on the level of the punishment force, that crime will have to meet that. So that someone could get 25 years for snatching a purse if the punishment that's being distributed in the Tetrad management is coming at that level. Or you could steal $1 billion and get 6 weeks in prison.
Or just a slap on the wrist.
Yeah. So this is a simplified way of saying that the crime must fit the punishment. We're in a reverse situation now.
So we're all criminals.
Yeah. We're all criminals. We all killed Kennedy. We duped the Iranians, and the Iranians duped themselves since they're us and we're them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Under electric conditions. So to say that someone's good or bad is irrelevant in this situation. What you could do is it requires a yoga of perception. How much tolerance can you put up with this? So entertainment becomes, self-entertainment becomes the new yoga. And self-entertainment is involvement in any media spectacle or any media information, no matter how alternative or how straight. That's our dilemma. Okay, so let's after hearing the sobering thoughts from the exes, let's hear Skolnick, a great alternative source, rant on about this for a few minutes. What does Skolnick make of, Sherman Skolnick out of Chicago, what does he make of this, this whole thing, especially after Bush went into the hospital that weekend.
So what is this? Is this his answering machine messages?
Yeah,
or?
This is a message. We haven't heard Skolnick for a couple of months, so mm-hmm. I thought this would be an interesting way to listen to Skolnick after hearing the exes and their advice. Filter Skolnick through that and see if Wayne remains the same and dedicated follower of Skolnick.
Okay, let's kick it.
Sherman Skolnick, Citizens Committee to Clean Up the Courts, 9800 Oglesby. Well, the ducks were all lining up. It became more and more evident that George Bush was becoming the target of a series of scandals. It was too good to believe. How Bush, on behalf of the Reagan-Bush campaign, stole the 1980 election by a treasonous deal with the Iranians to delay release of the hostages. Then there is the Bush White House involved in protecting Saddam Hussein, in stealing billions from the U.S. Treasury under disguise of commodity credits, supposedly loans for foodstuffs for Iraq, actually for weapons. Just at that point, our attention is diverted. George Bush in a medical problem, real or otherwise. Was it just a coincidence, huh? When the Watergate scandal was escalating against Nixon, well, he tried a similar ploy, medical problem. After all, the ultra-rich have different factions. Now is a growing split. Some want to throw away Bush to destabilize the government. That becomes an excuse for the secret government to have even more power. After all, George Bush never was the real head of the government. Installed years ago is a secret apparatus, Federal Emergency Management Agency. About the only time the press mentions them is in cleaning up after a tornado, as if that is their primary function. The super bankers really own and operate most everything. We seldom see their faces or any details about them by the monopoly press. FEMA, as it is called, sits above the U.S. Constitution, directing the government. Bush takes orders from them. FEMA has for several decades been running things on war powers still in effect. As we have pointed out, numerous federal judges wear two hats, as federal judge and as Federal Emergency Management Agency functionary. There is a growing economic crisis when it comes to a head. Well, FEMA will order what rights smaller bank depositors will have, if any rights at all. And your local federal judge will see to it that you have no legal remedy. A president disabled by medical questions and by a scandal of treason fits perfectly into the scheme for the secret government to show their hand. The press fakers will be in a position to try to convince us that it is an emergency, that the government be run by a committee, maybe even a military junta, like a banana republic. The press bosses have known all along about these matters, yet suddenly they publicize the treason of Bush, of the October surprise, as if they just found out. And why were Reagan and Bush selected in the first place? Simple. They are blackmailable. Reagan handwrote a letter to Nixon, which we showed on cable TV, that John F. Kennedy is a subversive and, if elected, should be dealt with. That is, assassinated. Reagan and his circle were involved in a sex scandal with Vicky Morgan. Reagan is a co-conspirator in her brutal murder. Bush has a long history, on the other hand, of illegal acts, including fraudulent oil deals in Mexico with his partner, Jorge Serrano. Those opposing Bush are happy to now be told all this. The danger is the super bankers are now releasing dirt on Bush for their good, not ours. Call up your favorite news faker and tell them to stop kidding us. We know what's going on. Playing again, the people mover system at O'Hare and Saddam Hussein, 731-1505.
Following the principle of the user is content, I bet you just love that. You just love Skolnick there, didn't you? Wayne has so much to manipulate. Yeah, did you hear me?
Yeah, no, actually, we missed what you first
said. I said, Wayne, since the user is the content of any medium, and in a sense, this message is the medium, you just love what Skolnick said, and you just ate that up. That's up your alley, isn't it? What are you doing, turning me off?
No, I'm turning myself off.
Oh, okay, you're swearing under your breath. Okay, well, let's go on to another. Well, that was interesting to juxtapose with the exes, right? I mean, Skolnick doesn't think that Bush is brilliant. He thinks he's a blackmailable evil dupe, right?
Mm-hmm. Who does Skolnick think that's pulling the strings of FEMA? FEMA is
the super rich.
Yeah.
That's Rockefellers, the Mellons, the Morgans, the Rothschilds, the usual, you know.
But they have under this organization, they have the ability to suspend constitutional rights and round up people under wartime.
People like you who should be jumping over the other side and saying, yeah, you're right, George Bush. God bless the Warren Commission. God bless the establishment. I'm telling you, as the exes themselves told us, I think it was the last show Mike was on. You don't know if you heard it. They said that the major problem in North America in the 90s will be the rise of neo-Nazism. So, Wayne, are you ready to get your balls cut off and be tortured? Or are you going to say, yeah, I'll do this, sir. I'll do it. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. What are you going to do, Wayne? Are you tough enough to handle it?
I think I'll be going underground.
You take it off. You're leaving the continent.
That's right.
Yeah, we're all cowards in the end, right? Hey, right? Bobby Seale says we got to stay here and fight.
Yeah, Bobby Seale says that you can't quit, though. I was talking to somebody about the fact that it's easier to drop out of the institution and the whole government situation. But Bobby Seale is telling us it doesn't matter. You can steal a rocket ship. You can go to the moon, and they'll still get you.
The
solar
government will still get you.
They'll still get you. Yeah. So you can't drop out. So you've got to do something instead.
So Bobby Seale corrected you.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It changed my life.
Okay, well, Wayne... There's a man who stood up and stayed here. Can you hear me when that plug falls out, Wayne?
No, I can't. Okay, it keeps on falling out. I'll move this over here.
Yeah.
And we're all set.
Okay, so there's a man who did stay here, and he went to jail for talking about this stuff all through the 80s, like Skolnick, right? He's sitting there in jail now. We all know who it is, a taboo person on CKLN, Mr. Lyndon LaRouche. But let me just give you a run-through of what they have to say. So we got some guests?
Next DJ.
Okay. Let me just give you the
response. Oh, hey, it's George Bush.
So let me give you a quick summary of what LaRouche's people say about the October surprise, which they were the first to expose. They were years ahead of Barbara Honegger.
When was this?
In December 1980. before Reagan came in.
1 month after it happened?
Yeah, if you assume it happened in October, the deal was made.
Right.
Now, that's how good LaRouche's network are. Well, LaRouche's people are probably involved in it, you know? Some of his sources are probably involved. It's a very complex part of Tetrit management to have LaRouche's organization functioning in the 80s. But anyways, this is what Jeffrey Steinberg, one of LaRouche's major security experts and protector of LaRouche on the security level when LaRouche is running for president. This is what Steinberg writes. He says, now, EIR means Executive Intelligence Review. EIR is LaRouche's glossy, expensive source of information. Oh, by the way, did you look at those, Wayne? You and Haley?
Yeah, read them.
You like them?
Read some of the stuff. They find a conspiracy in every corner. Even the people who are trying to plant a few trees to green the globe are considered heavy conspirators and industrial usurpers. You know,
a little too much, eh?
Yeah, well, it creates that balance of imbalance, I guess, from each perspective.
Right, right. And you, Wayne, you don't read, right?
That's right.
Yeah, okay. You just look at the covers, the nice covers.
Look at the pictures.
Okay, here's what Steinberg says. In December 1980, the Executive Intelligence Review published the first in a series of articles identifying Iranian arms deal Cyrus Hashemi as a double agent for the Reagan-Bush electoral campaign. So they named Cyrus Hashemi, who later got murdered in 1986 as a result of the breakout of the whole scandal, the Iran-Contra stuff, which he was involved in. They named the guy a month or so after the whole scandal started. But that's pretty amazing, right? So Hashemi helped broker a deal between William Casey and the Iranian regime to delay the release of the American hostages being held in Tehran until after the November 1980 elections. Hashemi, the Executive Intelligence Review charged, had been working since late 1979 as a mediator between the Carter White House and the Iranian mullahs on an arms-for-hostages deal, but had switched sides when he perceived that the Republican slate would likely win the 1980 presidential election. Now, LaRouche and him have always said since then that the Carter was, some of the people in Carter's administration were doing this kind of arms-for-hostages stuff even before Bush and Reagan got into it.
But they didn't have the right connections to pull it off.
Well, the connection was Cyrus Hashemi. But he was going to deal with a new president, so he dropped Carter.
Okay? Right.
In the latter months, you know, of 1980. The Executive Intelligence Review specifically identified, and this is pretty good, in December 1980, they specifically identified George Bush and James Baker III as key players. Now, remember, they're just citizens at that point, right? George Bush is running for president. James Baker III, probably nobody knew much about him. James Baker III and Bush were identified as key players in what was already referred to at that time as the October Surprise. Now, the way it was meant then
was Carter would surprise Reagan
and get the benefits of release just before the election. Now, over 10 years later, that scandal, the October Surprise scandal, has resurfaced in what may be the opening salvo of Bushgate. So he's taking, LaRouche is taking the same side or view as Skolnick. In virtually every detail, the October Surprise scandal is identical, the one that's out now, to the reports first issued by the Executive Intelligence Review. That's why I always recommend try to get LaRouche's information. You'll be way ahead of the game. You know, Noam Chomsky follows way behind on this stuff. Okay? In a lengthy commentary, you don't have to agree with LaRouche. You don't cover myself in that area, right? You don't have to agree with LaRouche, but if you want to know, you go to the people who know.
Or even like LaRouche, but...
What?
He's got good information.
Yeah, who likes LaRouche?
No, I said you don't have to like LaRouche.
Yeah, just understand that Jell-O Biafra only has one side of the sources, as he elucidated on Hans Berkschmidt's show last night. He just goes with Covert Action Bulletin, Nation Magazine, what else, Haley?
Plaza of Times.
Yeah, and Noam Chomsky. Now, Noam Chomsky works at MIT, and LaRouche is in jail. So which one's a more serious operative in terms of a threat of real information? In a lengthy commentary published in the New York Times on April 15th, former Carter National Security Council staffer Gary Sick identified Jamshid Hashemi, the older brother of the now deceased Cyrus Hashemi, as one of his primary eyewitness sources on meetings in Washington, D.C., Madrid, and Paris involving top Iranian clerics, Reagan Bush campaign manager, and later CIA Director William Casey, George Bush, and others. The Sick revelations, that's Gary Sick's revelations, grabbed national news headlines and were the subject of an ABC Nightline program. Then they go into, on April 16th, PBS Television's Frontline aired a documentary on the October Surprise, which prominently featured the Hashemi brothers, one of them alive, one of them dead, Cyrus having died in 1986. One of the other central October Surprise players interviewed by Frontline, now dig this, was Miles Copeland, That Sting's buddy, Stu Copeland's father. Now, Miles Copeland last year put out a book. I see 1990s book came out and identified the whole Scientology project as started by him and his buddies in the MKUltra CIA mind control program. It's a little known fact. Now, Miles is dead since then. Now, this Sting's, what does Stu play, drums? Stuart Copeland's father.
Police, I guess.
Yeah, in the police. And his brother, Stu Copeland's brother, is a biggie in Hollywood, apparently, right now.
Oh, I don't know.
No, I'm saying that. He is involved in some level.
So he's claiming that he started the... He set up L. Ron Hubbard as a dupe to start this whole thing rolling with Scientology and...
That's what Miles Copeland says in his book, which came out.
As a literary figurehead, though. Of course, L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah.
Scientology, science fiction, the perfect figurehead.
He uses L. Ron Hubbard to create the whole language of Scientology, and he reaps the benefits.
Yeah, well, the point was that they knew that they had a population that was growing alienated from 19th century values, so they offered what's called the Aquarian Conspiracy, or the New Age, or decentralized community control, hatred of centralizing politicians, going to cults and things like this. The whole cult thing, LaRouche's people charge and have been following the revelations of CIA guys as they drop off the vine through the years, and they say that this, like operations like CKLN, are part of a decentralizing thing that's used to fragment people from any kind of organized on a level to deal with the super rich, who are multinational. Okay, so.
There's also an argument that once you start centralizing the organization, that becomes
part of a disservice.
And it becomes part of the whole game as well.
Yeah. Well, the super rich have always controlled the centralized national situations so that the national ideal failed too.
I thought one of the things that you've been telling people is fragmentation.
I say human scale is a reflex reaction to the situation we've come to in our mixed corporate media effects. I don't have any identification with anything that's going on. I offer the technique of suspended judgment.
Okay, which is from an individualistic point of view.
No,
right?
No point of view.
That's not a point of view.
I study the effects.
Yeah.
Like I never read a Margaret Atwood novel, but I can study her audiences. I study the effects of her works on people who think a lot of her books.
Mm.
That's what you do today. You don't study the content or the figures. You study the ground, the effects of media on people and content stuff. You know, I wouldn't buy a Michael Jackson record, but I'd study the effects of it. I'd study the effects of, what is the new rap group, Dream Warriors?
Sure.
Yeah, take them. Study the audience, not what they do. I mean, I've got enough tactile sensibility that I can have music and danceability and aesthetic release intrinsically if I've got all my senses in harmony. Now, you got to get all your senses in harmony before you can have the technique of suspended judgment, right?
Tactility.
Tactility is only one sensory level. That's the bias of the interplay of all the senses.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be visual, acoustic, kinetic, proprioceptive, and tactile. We'll stop there, right?
Okay.
And so you have been distorted by your time. The sensory bias of your time has conditioned you to lose your sensory harmony. No matter what time in history, now or then, you've got a bias. And every subgenius, true Bob-inspired subgenius, gets out of the sensory bias of his time and can work with the bias of his time and other sensory modalities. That's our point here. Now, to do that, you got to have a technique of suspended judgment. In other words, like Beefheart says, I'm not really here. I just hang around for my friends. Now, my friends are everywhere, right? They all have different sensory biases. So I'm in touch with everybody. I'm a friend of everybody, right? Of course, other friends get jealous, so then they turn out to be my enemies temporarily. You know what I mean? They get conflict. But what am I going to do about that, right? Just wave.
Keep things interesting.
Just wave like Reagan, right? Wave. Okay, just to continue here, sorry for that digression from Miles Copeland. But Miles Copeland, he was interviewed by Frontline. They say a recently deceased career CIA officer who stated that he, Miles Copeland, along with Henry Kissinger, David Rockefeller, and Kermit Roosevelt, another career CIA officer who later worked as a vice president at Chase Manhattan Bank, had worked to bring down the Carter presidency. Copeland's on-camera admissions corroborated a story first published in LaRouche's magazine, New Solidarity, a national newspaper associated with LaRouche, in the summer of 1982 entitled, quote, How Kissinger Delayed the Release of U.S. Hostages in Iran. That article named, the article by LaRouche's people, named Kissinger, Rockefeller, Bush, and Baker as the key players in an elaborate deal with then-Iranian parliamentary speaker Ayatollah Beheshti to hold the hostages in Tehran until after the Reagan-Bush inauguration. Shortly after the original October surprise expose by the EIR, of course, the EIR, they're doing this stuff when nobody knows about it, and they're sued by Hashemi. They were sued by Cyrus Hashemi in 81, approximately. I don't know the exact date, but we'll assume just after December 1980. Now, they get sued by the guy who's dead, now dead, right? EIR was sued by Hashemi. Hashemi falsely denied that he had played any role in the hostage shenanigans. Other news agencies that were also sued by Hashemi included Cable News Network and the Washington Post. Both quickly settled out of court. The EIR didn't settle out of court. They stuck to the accuracy of its story, and the suit dragged on for years in court until a federal judge dismissed the case, in quotes, with prejudice. Now, I think that means that they dismissed it and were mad at the harassment of Hashemi towards the EIR. Is that right? Maybe Dublin knows the legal meaning of with prejudice. But I think it means like assassination, you know? Exterminate with prejudice.
With extreme prejudice.
Extreme prejudice. Anyways, the EIR won that by having the suit against them dismissed. You never knew about this. It's not reported on alternative media, is it? Government documents later revealed. I mean, Wayne, you bring me in the latest stuff from the Christic Institute. Those guys are so far behind, it's ridiculous. Okay. So, not that their information is bad, but look, don't specialize in that stuff, all right? This is all the stuff I wanted to say to Mike Dyer, but I never had a chance, because he doesn't read this stuff. You do, so I can bellow, okay, Wayne? So don't take it personally.
Hey, that's not the only source of information, though.
Well, yeah, I give
just
you the...
one side, right?
I give you the EIRs. You've learned that
there
from
you go.
Me. Okay. Government documents later revealed that the EIR charges were, if anything, an understatement. Okay, so the government documents show that what they wrote in 1980 was true. In an effort to conceal the truth about the shameful hostage maneuverings by both the Carter and Reagan Bush teams, the FBI classified key Hashemi documents state secret and for years blocked their release. Okay, on April 17th, one day after the Frontline show was aired nationally, former Carter State Department official and New York Times columnist Leslie Gelb called on Congress to appoint an independent panel to probe the alleged Reagan-Bush campaign interference. And then they quote Gelb and just about how Congress should look into it, should appoint a nonpartisan commission of private citizens to investigate the charges. Numerous sources in the United States and Western Europe have informed LaRouche and the EIR that the October surprise revival, and this is Skolnick's point, is the first of a string of scandals that are about to be unleashed against the Bush presidency. Now remember, this could be paranoia from the Exxon's point of view, right? What LaRouche's people are saying here. Just as Skolnick could be paranoid. But anyways, this string of scandals are about to be unleashed against the Bush presidency. These sources report that leading Democratic Party figures have joined forces with some Israeli intelligence networks to attempt to damage the Bush reelection prospects and perhaps drive Bush out of the Oval Office Nixon style. That's interesting they bring in the Israeli thing because Bush is putting a little pressure on Israel right now, right? Mm-hmm. So among other Bushgate scandals reportedly in the media hopper, that means upcoming, are the Bush administration cover-up and possible complicity, get this, Wayne, you like this one, in the Pan Am 103 terrorist bombing over Lockerbie, Scotland in December 1988. That's a possible scandal coming up. The cover-up of the Gander Newfoundland. We made this article. The cover-up of the Gander Newfoundland plane crash. That's another scandal in the hopper. And the assassination, dig this, in February 1986 of Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme. An event inextricably tied to the Reagan Bush team's cover up of the Iran Gate scandal. Now, in February, shortly after Palme was killed, I'm not reading from the article now, then it came out in the media that LaRouche did it. Okay, now the whole slander against LaRouche that began once he was did well in that election in April 1986 in Illinois, that whole slander against LaRouche was. Well, one of the slanders featured the fact that LaRouche's organization killed Olof Palme. But here is LaRouche exposing who really did it and saying, you did it, Bush. Maybe they both did it, right?
Well, also, there was a lot of allegations that P2 was involved in that as
yeah.
well.
Yeah. That's right. It is, which is what LaRouche has taken that angle to, that P2 was involved. It is too early to tell whether the assault on Bush is serious or not. One nagging question is how Bush's Carter Democrat rivals and the Israelis are going to slam the president's men for criminal acts in which they themselves actively participated. Now, there's a good point. Taking your theme, Wayne, we're all criminals, the ones pointing the fingers and have the power to do it may be and probably involved in the scandals themselves. So the LaRouche people know this. And so, see, this goes beyond Chomsky's categorization of the state against terrorist, state terrorism versus mythical PLO terrorism, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's all involved. You can't use those categories. You've got to know that everybody's at least a triple agent. So the Bush's Carter Democrat rivals, how are they going to, just like in Iran gate, many of the scandals, the Kennedy assassination, the guys on the Warren Commission were involved in killing Kennedy, right? So how do these people... that's why every scandal gets sort of bogged down in mud, because only certain information can come out, and then they'll focus on that because the other information will link the one who revealed the first part. Mm-hmm. Very complex. Okay?
I'm just going to interrupt for a second, Bob. We had a caller, and...
caller?
No, a very, very informative caller. He informed us that with prejudice meant that the courts were calling the plaintiffs a bunch of idiots.
And so, the plaintiffs are the guys who what?
Well, the plaintiffs... would be, I'm sorry, I've forgotten the man's name.
Yeah, Hashemi charged Issoud EIR.
So they were calling Hashemi an idiot, essentially, okay. The court.
In other words, the judge admits that the guy's a horse's ass, and he says that I have prejudice against you. You are stupid.
Yeah.
That's what it means?
Yeah.
He's losing his technique of suspended judgment. You know, the balance scales of the Justice Department. Okay, well, we
rather
thank that caller.
Rather delicate thing to begin with.
Yeah, so we thank the caller for clearing that up.
Absolutely.
So if these would-be partisan warriors are serious about bringing down the Bush regime, this is the final paragraph. And just as I said, two posters fell behind me. Okay, if these, in the studio here, if these would-be partisan warriors are serious about bringing down the Bush regime, they would do well to reopen the files on the Bush administration's railroading of political economist Lyndon LaRouche. So there it is. They say, free me, free Lyndon. And then we'll get to the bottom of this. They always put that in every article.
Sure.
If you want to get the bottom of anything, free Lyndon LaRouche.
Well, you know what really bothers
me? Tell that
me
to Adam Vaughn, Wayne. He's working at CBC now. Tell that to Adam Vaughn.
As if that's going to make a difference.
Yeah. I can say any name.
Well, you know what really bothers me is the whole manipulation of the structure of the debate around and the people's assumptions that, okay, there's U.S. hostages taken by Iran. Out of the embassy. Who are these people?
Yeah.
U.S. embassy in Iran? They're all CIA.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean...
we're all CIA, Wade.
Well,
there goes that argument. Let's go on to another one. You want to talk about limiting the terms of the debate, Wayne? We killed Kennedy.
But the fact that these group of people have more importance than anything else that goes on in the world. Because all of the media attention is on them. Everybody thinks that, oh, my God, this is the critical situation here. A U.S. presidency depends on this situation, whether they're freed or not. And meanwhile, you know, there's millions and millions of other people that are dying in other ways that a lot of the money that's being spent on this.
Like,
no, not at all. And nothing's being done about it at all.
Well, that's why I say support me. I'll turn this thing around so that we aren't all guilty of killing Kennedy. We bring in media ecology. We can cut down the electric involvement, the electric interdependence, and force us all to be guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And take any little incident and inflate it like E equals MC squared and inflate it to infinite mass. And the real physical dimensions of our media environment don't get dealt with. That's why you should take on me. That's why I should be moved in immediately.
I think that people have to take extreme action and turn everything off, right?
Right, for a while.
Okay, turn off your radio.
Yeah, turn off this radio. Like the truckers, man, they just focused on their own medium, the trucks. Why didn't they say, we're not only going to stop our trucks, we're going to force all you people to turn off the coverage of us and our strike? You know, the media coverage, that kills them too, because that lets all the pinks know what happened, and they complain, and the government stops it, right? So if you're going to make any demonstration, demand no coverage.
Mm-hmm.
All right? But that's a hard thing to do, because how's anybody going to know you're going to do it? Only I can figure that out. It's like the old biblical thing, you know, the only the sub-genius can go through the eye of the needle, right? Only the subgenius can do that. And the eye of the needle is the erogenous electric zone we're all in right now. I experienced some of it earlier tonight, right? And my ears are burning when I get into manipulating tactility.
So we got to get off dancing on the tip of the needle and get into the go through the eye. Right?
Which reminds me, I got a joke. How many subgeniuses does it take to screw in a light bulb?
I give up.
None. It's too hot in there. Now, I know you didn't get it, Wayne. You have a good way of laughing as if you got it. But here's what I really mean.
We got it.
I've never met anybody who's got it yet. Now,
you got it,
Haley, because I explained it to you last night. Okay, so Haley got it. All right, Haley's the first. But why is it too hot in there? How does that affect screwing in a light bulb? Wayne?
I give up.
Right. The point is, how many subgenies does it take to screw
inside of a light bulb?
In a light bulb.
And it's too hot.
None, because it's too hot in there. Okay, all of Toronto's guffawing now. They all got it now.
It always hurts really bad when you have to explain it, though.
Not me. I can make it more fun explaining it. So what are we? We're taking calls tonight. Eventually,
I guess so. We got half an hour left.
Okay. Is there any I got a couple of predictions here. We'll go into it if we don't get any calls. But if anybody wants to interact now...
Okay, now's the time.
We're ready.
What is the number anyway?
I can't remember.
595-1478? Okay.
595-1478 if you want to get on. Probably Dublin will probably want to get on and gloat about how you predicted Bush would be a great president, you know.
I hear him now. I hear him now.
Okay. We got two calls, actually.
Okay, well, thanks for waiting for an hour and a half. But this is what happens when I'm only on for once a month. You know, there's a lot of backlog we got to put out.
Well, maybe we should advertise the next show.
Yeah, June 13th.
Yeah. Right after the final Twin Peaks.
Yeah. So June 13th, July 11th.
When is the final Twin Peaks, by the way?
June 10th.
Okay.
Monday. I don't know what time. What?
A Monday now.
Monday.
They keep switching it around.
Yeah. June 10th. We'll be on June 13th after the Twin Peaks, then July 11th, and then August 8th. Okay, so...
And that's it.
Here's a prediction by... Oh, we're ready to go? Okay, here's a prediction by the Exus, done a few months ago. Listen to this one. A private citizen... Maybe this will be some friend of yours, Wayne. A private citizen will ask the Prime Minister... That's Mulroney.
That's me, actually, talking about.
Yeah, we'll ask Prime Minister Mulroney to do Mulroney's shopping for him. No, he'll ask Mulroney to do the citizen's shopping, right? Do my shopping. And we'll say the Prime Minister doesn't know the prices of anything. Okay, there's a prediction. All right, another one. Taxpayer revolt in Toronto. Are the truckers the beginning of that? Okay. Here's another prediction. Because of the events in Iraq in the next several months, many will say that the coalition forces should have pressed on to Baghdad. Wayne wouldn't have said that.
And Norman Schwarzkopf would have.
Yeah, and bring Saddam Hussein to international justice. The Exus say there is a high probability that Iraqis will mass their troops again on the Kuwaiti border, claiming Kuwait is murdering Iraqis. So we can look for that. Here's one that came true. They predicted that Winnie Mandela will be declared guilty of the charges she instigated a young person's death. This will cause riots in which many die. Have the riots started yet?
I don't know.
Okay, so they predicted Winnie Mandela will be found guilty. Are we ready? Okay.
Do we have to...
Okay.
What?
Go ahead.
I'm on?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll turn it down a little bit.
Am I on?
Yes.
You're on loud and...
I can't hear anything because I better turn on the radio here.
That's right, yeah, you got to turn on the radio.
Okay. Okay, I'm back.
Oh, this is Kidney.
How you doing?
Listen, you...
This is your Dateline from California. Hi, this is Dateline, California.
Yeah, now listen, you're not here in Toronto very much, but you're lucky you tuned in tonight to catch the Exus. You tell those guys down there, Bob New, Bob Old, all those guys down there, what's happening.
So, Bob, I went out to see John Stockwell.
You saw him speak?
I saw him speak.
And did you tell him about Fritz Kramer?
Now, Bob, he was very eloquent on the FEMA thing at that point.
He's taking Skolnick's line that we can look at FEMA as trying to do something right now?
Yeah, he very much like what Skolnick was talking about.
Is that right?
Yeah.
How long did he speak?
He talked for 3 hours. He's a very good speaker.
And a lot of question period.
A lot of question period. He basically, you know, the first question is, who killed... Yeah, so then he sort of illuminated a little bit about what the script was about, which is what I was intrigued about. And then I, about like a week later, I read an article by Mort Saul saying that he'd read the script and it was a prosaic piece of crap.
Yes, that was in People magazine.
Right, that's the one. Yeah,
so Mort Saul's the factions are fragmenting already, right?
All right, yeah. It sounded like, if you know Oliver Stone's track record, it sounds like it could be a cover-up in his inept self anyway, you know what I mean?
Yeah, or he works for his banker father, stockbroker, Wall Street broker father, I don't know.
And that Miles Copeland connection is just incredible.
There's something new for you.
The police, and MK Ultra. All right.
Who are the brain police? Asked Frank Zappa.
Right.
Who are the brain police?
Very good. Every move you make stings.
The message in the bottle.
And what's Sting doing now? Running around with the eco-fascists. He set up something in California and it got totally ripped off. All the funds, right? I mean, Sting needs to stop reading Carl Jung and study LaRouche. And James, you're in that milieu. Why don't you tell those guys that? You subscribe to New Solidarity, but they wouldn't give it to you because they didn't trust you.
So they're sending it to me now. Now what? She phones me back and she's starting to mimic. The woman from New Solidarity is starting to play like messages on my answering machine, like she's the Queen of England. She's going, "We know who you are."
So they looked you through their files. I mean, they haven't been in touch with you in 5 years, right? And they call you up?
They call me up to see how the radio show is going.
They
want to know how the radio show is going.
Yeah, they've been spying on me for years.
Yep.
But I love them. I work with them. So that's what you do when you work in the electric environment. You work with your spies, like Kim Philby and James Angleton, right? The Vatican and the Queen worked as close buddies all the way through and pretended that they hated each other eventually. That wasn't true.
So did anybody realize that Jimmy Jesus Angleton was like the dupe? Like he was the one that was put in to corrupt the CIA and that...
Right.
That show last night? I mean, did anybody realize that...
Well, that show was
the point of view was all...
That show
wrong.
Was terrible. Now,
I know.
This was on the other night?
Yeah,
I heard
it was on last night.
I made a film about this years ago.
Well, the reason it was on Tuesday night, May 14th, there's the number 14, was that the Queen had arrived, and she made a condition that she would come in and tell Congress how to follow the new eco-fascist policy, only on condition that her little toady British journalist would expose the Vatican agent, Knight of Malta, James Jesus Angleton. So it was a total British operation, and the Queen and Bush sat home that night after their party, watched the videotape of Frontline, laughed about their buddy putting down James Jesus Angleton, right? Now, the thing is that the Queen ordered that, and anybody who watched it, it was a poorly done show. It didn't tell you anything. And the question you just brought up, Mr. Kidney, is the right question we got to ask the exes. How much was... Angleton, aware that the meeting was a message, and he was there not to act on any information, but just to operate in the interval between Russia and the United States to keep the Cold War myth going. That's the question. How was he a dupe, or was he really working for Rockefeller, or what? Right?
Right.
And the journalist never even approached at that level.
I couldn't believe it. I mean...
Well, what do you expect? You might as well throw out your TV. You're not going to get any.
Throw that thing out.
Yeah. I mean, and sue it at the same time. It's an extension of us. It's human. Media are human. We can sue it. This is raised in Thomas Pynchon's new book, Vineland. Have you read that, Mr. Kidney?
That question is raised, is it?
Yeah.
But then you would have to drag it through
Vineland?
The courts.
I haven't read Vineland. Do you think it's worthwhile?
It's certainly worth your time.
Did you study the facts, or did you read the book?
I actually read the book.
Unbelievable, as it may seem. Ladies and gentlemen, he doesn't read Margaret Atwood, but he does read Thomas Pynchon.
No, I'll tell you why I read it, because I wrote it, and then I wanted to see how much was published.
Well, why did you...
You read it, you'll see I did write it, because it's all about top-down analysis and bottom-up. By Pynchon, you haven't seen him in 17 years. That's the same length of time between Ulysses and Finnegan's Wake. The American Ulysses, Gravity's Rainbow, comes out 17 years later, Vineland, which is the Viking term for America, Vinland, which puns on Finn. So Pynchon is putting out Finnegan's Wake here, right? His version, American version. I'm the only expert in Finnegan's Wake, so that proves I wrote it. You follow the reasoning there.
I've got it.
You got it.
I got it.
You tell it to Sheila Gostick and all those buddies you're down at those little clubs.
Sheila Gostick.
Yeah, Sheila Gostick. Now, the point is, James, how long are you going to stay among those dungeons and dungeons on Queen Street where, if they don't go to Connie and get the AIDS treatment, they're in big trouble, right? The mirror technique. Do you know about that? That we got the cure for AIDS?
Well, I heard.
Yeah, and word of mouth still has not talked to me about it.
I know.
They won't talk to me about it.
I know. That's unbelievable. It's unbelievable, Bob.
Most of it's unbelievable. We don't exist. That's the big thing. All the thought forms and perceptual patterns we develop as we evolve is all seeing flashes of our own life pass before us. Effects precede causes as we gradually realize we never did live under electric conditions. There is no life before death. Right? That's what we really realize. I mean, you start living in a bunker a few years ago because you sort of perceived that, right? Start living in a tomb grave.
That was in honor of Hitler.
Yeah. For being the last guy to realize maybe he could, if he made it to before TV came in, if he could take over the world before they brought in TV, then he could be the last person alive, right?
By the way, did you know that Kennedy was Jewish? John F. Kennedy was Jewish. Do you know that?
That's not true.
Yep, because he was shot in the temple.
But he wasn't shot in the temple.
Well, that proves the Warren Commission right there.
Let me tell you, what you know about the Kennedy assassination is not right.
left.
Lee Harvey Oswald did do it.
He did do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And that's the pattern I want you to use at your parties throughout the 90s, okay?
Which Everybody's Lee Harvey getting... Oswald?
What?
Which Lee Harvey Oswald?
There was only one wing.
There's only one.
The one that James played himself. He played Lee Harvey Oswald. He was early recruit for a double. Well, the doubles are left doing plays.
Nice
but
getaway,
there was no
James.
Doubles.
Gary Oldman's my double.
Does he look like you?
Does he look? Yeah, he does, actually. But he's, as I say, we're all 20 years too old to play the poor sucker now.
Yeah. So give us a final percept. I guess we got other callers.
I don't have any, really.
What did we begin with? I don't think you got the point.
I'm not sure if I got to the point. I was Stockwell.
You were in California.
I was trying to cover
the... Oh, Stockwell, yeah. What, do you also see John Judge lecture or Dave Emery? And all these things are in L.A. right now.
Yeah, I missed Dave Emery. But, Stockwell's he's a real decent man, and he really is. The point of the Stockwell lecture was that he was predicting that the economy would be so bad in the States that Bush would have to invade Cuba.
Really?
Yeah, that's his prediction.
Well.
Because he's been following what Bush is, he said you could predict that Bush was going to attack Iraq 2 years before it happened because of the way he lets things slip out of his mouth.
Right.
Didn't he think that Iraq sort of jumped up in the queue and in front of Cuba, for example?
Yeah, in front of that queue. He just said that right now Bush keeps talking about Cuba. He talks about, because Stockwell goes to Washington all the time and is privy to all the luncheon meeting conversations, and that's what George Bush talks about is Cuba, Cuba, Cuba. So that's what he's basing that on.
Well, so, I think Stock was probably wrong. I think.
Yeah, I think he is too. I think George is going to have the old William Casey heart attack.
No, George is going to be a great president. I agree with the exes on this. No, I mean, we're going to have a depression for a couple of years. Then when fusion energy comes in and a whole bunch of other new technologies, by the end of this century, we're going to be amazed at the luxury we're floundering around in.
No, but you don't
we
think...
We are.
You don't think he's going to...
All
have,
of us, Wayne.
All
the
of
whole
us.
Planet, all the dead people, all the half-living people.
You don't think he's going to get rocked by the Iran... Oh, yeah,
what
you're going to take...
What do you think lockdown Bob Rule means?
Bob,
I mean, I'm not promising anti-utopia. I'm promising good times, reality. And I'll bring it in. Once we have this AIDS press conference, that's when it takes off.
All right.
You watch it. Billions of dollars flow my way. Because I ordered them to send it to me. So, you're an aesthete. You're a throwback to Oscar Wilde. Mr. Kinney, what do you think of the definition of Bob is? The theater and book worlds are merely mirrors. The pop and television worlds are merely echoes. But my mixed corporate media mega micro project achieves manipulative tactility.
All I can say is Bob is everywhere. If you look at every fucking movie that's coming out this year, I'm Bob, and it's Bob this and Bob that.
Bob?
Have you noticed the Bob cult?
Yeah, that's right. Bill Murray.
Bill Murray is Bob, and...
Yeah, it's everywhere. Doritos, chips. I mean, James, you must be amazed.
Well, I'm just a James. You're a Bob.
Yeah. Well, you must be amazed. I told you this years ago, and it's all coming true. And you
James, know. Jesus, Jimmy, Jesus Angle.
Well,
what's
you know,
your angle?
Yeah, a ton of goodness. A ton of goodness comes out of Club 22.
Anyway, peace be with you, brother, and Godspeed you. God give you speed.
Yeah, check out page 74 of Vineland and page 340.
340-74, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to. I was looking at it for the last year now. I was looking at that cover, and I was going, I wonder if I should read that.
Yeah. Well, I think
go.
You should.
Okay.
You'll enjoy it, and it'll bring back a bit of left hemisphere.
Oh, it'll bring back the old days of reading. That's good.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, another caller. Still there?
Hello?
Yep.
Hey, Bob.
You're on.
Oh, it's Sean.
Yeah, how's it going?
Sean, one of the greatest graduates of the Mike Dyer era. Yeah,
yep.
We're doing all right.
You're doing okay?
Now, Sean, you're a balanced mind. What do you make of the Exodus? You kind of like it, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I agreed with him.
Now, look at that, Wayne. This guy is like 19 years old. Wayne's like approaching 30, 35 or something, and he's still jerking off in his adolescent fingering of authority. And young Sean here can handle with maturity what the vision of the Exodus is, right, Sean?
Yeah, I agree with him. I think, well, you can't finger point anymore.
That's right.
Because there's nowhere to point to anyway.
Yeah.
You're everywhere, so there's no point in fingering.
We just got a huge, this is the punishment, what is it now? The crime must fit the punishment. That's due to momentum. We've got all these media environments of momentum swilling around, engaged in a mythic government warfare or civil warfare. How the hell can anybody manage that? It's going to be a lot of broken heads in the management of it. Now, we created this environment because we use it. The
yeah.
users are guilty.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's why, because since no one's in control, right, that means we're all in control.
Right.
So you can't say anyone's good or bad because we're all doing it, so.
All you can do...
So, like, even if you're screwing someone else around, right, you're just screwing yourself around.
Yeah.
So it's no good or bad at all, so you can't finger point.
Right. So
it doesn't really matter what you do.
So the only thing you can do is some kind of yoga. Not the the Eastern yoga, or, you know, the Indian discipline or whatever from out in the Orient, but the yoga of self-entertainment, which is the yoga of using any medium as an extension of yourself to entertain and hypnotize yourself.
Yeah.
That's what you've got to control.
That's
and then
good.
At the same time you talk a monolithic, megalithic talk of Bob, well, you know, the Esperanto, Bob, put Bob in power while you do your media ecology privately.
Because
I'm the only one who can explain it perfectly well.
Yeah,
I can explain it. You can't understand it, but I can keep explaining it. And that's what we need, someone to explain it. That's what mind is, right?
Yeah.
The
then,
echo.
Like, you can sit around and do your own media ecology and then use the Bob to, like, communicate with other people.
Yeah, to reflect it back to you.
Yeah, and then no one understands it, which is good.
Yeah.
Then they'll get forced back into their own private media ecology.
See how
people get pissed off and they, like, everyone... When you started talking about Twin Peaks, everyone got pissed off and turned off the radio.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
We took a month, like, break, and now it's going good again.
Yeah.
There you go.
See, now look, this guy understands. Sean understands Wayne. We always like Sean. So, Sean, we've complimented you enough. Unless you got something to say, we better take another call because time's running out.
Yeah, I wonder if you...
What about this guy? Is he going to let us go way over? Is this guy hip, the next guy, Wayne?
Which guy?
The next programmer.
Oh,
He offered to let us go over last time.
It's a different guy this time.
Oh, okay. He's probably a new guy who wants to start off, you know, get move. So is oats, right? Okay, yes.
You have influence, Bob.
Okay, Sean.
Yeah, I wonder, have you, what do you think about the fractal stuff?
I'll be playing in probably on the July 11th show. I'll play the X's on fractals.
Excellent, because I wrote to them and asked them about that, and they never answered me.
Well, they don't... You have to pay for anything from the...
Yeah, I know, but I just asked if they'd done anything, and they... Like, they never... If you write them, they never answer your letters, right?
That's, well, unless you send money or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they don't ask these questions. I do. I'm the only one that's doing this archive.
Yeah, I know, but I just, like, wrote them and said, have they ever covered anything on fractals or chaos?
Well, we just did it. We just did it on April 26th, so they probably would say no. They hadn't, because
oh, okay.
I hadn't done it yet.
Oh, okay.
We did a whole section on geometry, which reflects into LaRouche's geometry, too. It's going
yeah.
to It's going to be amazing when we play that. And, of course, in next show, we'll talk to James Joyce, Marsha McLuhan, Wyndham Lewis about Eric McLuhan's thesis and about Finnegan's Wake. That'll blow you away. When you hear James Joyce and Marshall going at each other, James Gibney will love that. You'll probably stay down in Queen Street for another 6 months because of that.
I thought there was going to be one with McLuhan and...
What?
I thought, didn't you say that McLuhan and Mae Brussel were going to get together?
Like, yeah, they did. They did get together.
And what did they say?
Marshall came up to, Marshall paid his homage to Mae. Mae didn't know much of Marshall's work. I tried to turn her on to it, but she didn't have time.
Mm-hmm.
But Marshall came up to Mae Brussel, according to the Exodus, and said, congratulations, you were the closest. And
yeah,
he meant she was the closest on the Kennedy assassination.
I thought, yeah.
He congratulated her.
McLuhan said he was going to try and distract them, right?
Yeah.
She did a better job of it, of distracting them.
No. Marshall did a better job of distracting them.
He was just complimenting her on, like, her information that she got.
Yeah, on her diligence in that specialty.
Yeah.
I mean, Marshall was encyclopedic, so he appreciated a lot of different people, but he was in it himself very interested in the Kennedy assassination, and he had his ideas of who did it. But he had the humility to congratulate May on that topic. But Marshall realized that who killed Kennedy is a puny secret, and that the real secrets are protected by public incredulity, and that's the level that Marshall worked on.
So
the big secrets.
What kind of real secrets? Or just like the basic media management?
Yeah, what I do and what
yeah.
I talk about and the fact
so
that I run the solar government. That's the biggest secrets that Marshall knew I was involved in.
And that's why, no one will listen to it.
Nobody will believe it.
Okie doke. Got it. So you're going to play this thing on geometry?
Yeah, that'll be in July 11th, let's say.
Yeah? Okay, good stuff.
Okay.
So you got other callers?
Yeah, we got other callers,
okay.
Wayne?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'll let you guys go then.
Okay.
All right, talk to you later.
Thanks, Sean.
Bye.
So what are we going to do, Wayne? Is there what time left? Dublin will probably put his 2 cents worth in, so we'll wait for Dublin to call.
Okay.
We got somebody? Looks like it.
No. Not yet.
Well, Wayne,
Well, there seems to be a lot of finger-pointing going on here, Rob.
Finger-licking good, yeah.
Yes, sir. So...
Is this... why don't we put on... if we've got to Haley's undertow. Did we get a chance to play any of Haley's undertow?
No. What is that?
You got your undertow, Haley.
Bob, I didn't bring it with me.
Oh, okay.
I just...
Next time.
Next time, I'll give you a few samples.
All right. So, a very controversial show we did tonight, Wayne.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Oh, we have a call. No, very interesting. I mean, you're used to putting this stuff out Sunday morning. It's a very good show, International Connection, with, what is it, Danny Sheehan and Emery right now. It's very good stuff.
Yep.
And,
it's going to get better.
It's going to get better, but I give you new ways to look at this stuff.
Yeah,
you're
but, Bob, you know what?
But?
Yeah, here's a big butt
okay,
right here.
Okay.
Here's a big old butt.
Right in my
okay.
butt. Do
That's
it to
right.
me.
What Daniel Sheehan is going to get at, his whole point in this whole interview in the next couple of weeks, is what's going on is a very extreme... Like, you're saying that there's going to be a brand new world...
Yes.
New world order,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Nice.
And it's going to... A kinder, gentler world. And
no more crispy
and
crunch. No more crispy crunch. Cry spy crunch. Crying spies crunch.
But what Sheehan is getting at is this whole thing... is somewhat of a conspiracy on the part of the white male population of this world to away with the anybody that falls outside of that.
The exes agree with that. Remember, in the 1400
but how can you herald somebody like George Bush, who is playing such a major role in making these things happen?
No, he's not trying to make it happen. He's taking historical forces and trying to move them into a good area. I mean, he had to be part of the elite.
I will believe that when I see
elite.
It.
That's right. You won't believe. That's why it's protected by public and Wayne's incredulity. So you'll have to wait. I'm just telling you that you can't assume that anybody's a white male or anything. Anybody who's on TV is part of the Antichrist. You can't assume that. They most likely are. But you can't assume it, so you don't want to get trapped in some kind of judgment.
Well, that's racism in itself.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right.
But
now remember,
I have a hard
Bush
time believing that George Bush has any good intentions at all.
We are not knowing. We are hearing what George Bush is doing in the various media. He is not doing any of those things. What we get through the media is a public icon. It's an image of...
His decision not to bomb the shit out of Iraq and to kill hundreds of thousands of people?
You don't know if he made that decision. The Pentagon made, well, we, the Exodus told us that it was the OSS.
He has got the power to turn that decision
does
around.
He? Now, wait,
well,
you believe
I don't know.
That?
Yeah, well,
see,
I don't
that's
know.
Up to you. That's right. You don't okay. know. You just said he could. We don't know. We don't know anything.
He went along with it, certainly.
Well,
he
no,
certainly didn't voice his opposition to it.
Maybe John Tower, Hines and Kennedy and all these assassinations were a battle between Bush did versus the Pentagon over what to do with the Kurds.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm telling you, we don't know anything about what's really going on. And stop twitching, Wayne.
I'm not twitching.
Well, what's that twitch on your face?
I don't know.
Okay, so wait. He's denying it. He's denying it. I saw it. He's lying right here.
Listen, this is something else. It's good. We only got 5 minutes left, and it's pretty well a whole other show topic.
Yeah.
But the role of the booties and George Bush, I want to get at the bottom of that.
Okay. The booty, you mean, what's his relationship to the exes?
Yeah.
The exes are from booties.
Right.
Right? So, yeah, I mean, we're talking to the booties, and he hasn't told anybody they're here yet.
No.
We got a caller, right?
Oh, yes, we do.
Yeah.
We got two callers, actually.
All right.
Okay.
Dublin.
Beep.
Okay. You're on.
Yeah. That's a good show, Bob. You got another caller?
Yeah, do we have another caller?
Yeah, we do.
Okay, so you...
I'll keep it short. That's a good show. I was going to ask you about the fractals, right?
Yeah.
But I know what Bush is in relation to the booties, if that's what you want to know.
Okay, tell
me.
You're fading there, Bob. You're not out here in the stratosphere with us. You're electrically, like your amperage.
Is low?
Yeah, like you're just like you're like a faint trace on the ionosphere.
Go ahead.
Okay, that just for you mean?
No, that's for some... I'm in discarnate right now. We're up here with some electronic clones.
Okay, so the point is it's been weak of the whole show?
No, it's been good. No, just 1 second you were weak there for a second.
Okay, good.
Some of the electronic clones wanted to see your reflected image there.
Right, well, Wayne's doing a good job here. It's complicated what he has to do.
No, we attenuated part of your signal through a wave of the Van Allen belts and... use the magnetic bottle to get some gases over there, and you're reflecting off it nicely.
Just to see me.
Well, they want to see you, Bob.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't want to see you.
Okay.
But several things. Listen, here's a couple of things. Bush is kind of like the lean and mean but extremely dignified. You know, what Harry Truman would have been if he'd have been, I don't know, more like Henry Fonda and more like Albert Einstein and more like a few good guys. Really, see... there has to be a human being who reserves judgment, who doesn't have a lot to say, but who represents the dignity and the accumulated strength of the human race for the Buddhist people, because whatever they say to us, they're saying to the whole planet, but they're saying it to our whole future, and it reflects upon our whole past, but we're a product of organic life, and we can only... the truth of what we are can only be expressed through us, do you see?
Yeah.
So they can't really ever understand us. They can move among us. And they can tell us things that we'd never guess. They can show us how to look through walls. And they can be our friends. And they can open up realms of understanding to
us. They are a biased medium, too.
Right. But they can't see us. That's like why Minerva sends the owls to watch on humans. Because in an important sense, we can't see the gods and goddesses of that pantheon either. And, you know, they must just watch our effects through the eyes of the birds.
Yeah, good point.
Now, the other thing about fractals, I had it figured out, if actuality precedes structure.
Yeah.
Now, that's a law of the universe, but it's founded in human language and human grammar. It has no application whatsoever outside the fact of a human speaking it. And yet, it summarizes exactly what Pythagoras believed and what Plato believed, that there was an invisible ideal geometry and that all the forms of reality were merely concrete accretions, just lumps of matter clumping around those ideal forms. And then you saw, you know, less perfect circles, less perfect straight lines, less perfect squares in the real world. But there was this invisible geometry. See what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, that's the idea of actuality coming before structure. In other words, the real comes before the tangible.
So yeah. It's
a very spiritual idea.
You look through a mirror darkly.
Well, no. You look at the surface of the universe, ontology, right? Now, this is where fractals come into it. You see, fractals seem to make the statement, it could be interpreted that way, okay, that almost every visual and probably three-dimensional aspect of the actual universe, of the whole planet, everything, space, you know, can be duplicated by mathematics generating clever camouflage. So you gear a fractal program into a computer, you come up with computer graphics, and you end up with images of mountains, rivers, trees seen from a distance, which are indistinguishable right down to 1,000 points of difference from a photograph of the real thing taken from the same distance.
Yeah.
Now, what they think is that fractals might be capable of approaching the limits of human measurement. What happens if we find that we can use a mathematical fractal computer graphic program to mimic in advance or to camouflage, like a butterfly grows camouflage on its back to hide on whatever tree it's going to find, you see? The idea that the camouflage in advance is there, right in our grammar, right in our mathematics, to cover any imaginable real structure that the universe might put in our face. Would this mean that the universe is just an illusion, or does it just make the problem more difficult of distinguishing, like, what are we really in touch with? Are we in touch with the world of illusion, or what? Some people would think that the more perfectly we can show that illusion is the scientific reality, then the more trapped we are in solipsism. The world is just a figment of our imagination. There's no faith. Other people say, no, we're much, much more than the mathematics, much, much more than the description, that we actually go beyond fractals, beyond superstring, beyond Pythagorean geometry. We go beyond everything. We can reach through if we want and shake hands with God. I say that with all due respect. Now,
to me,
in the ideal, Bob. Now, see, this is the thing. Where do the people from Booties come into this? What's the future? And two other points. You did predict that the beginning of the concatenating explosion, which was going to ultimately destroy the foul Mulroney government, would be found in September, eh?
Yes.
And it's interesting. They've gone back to Parliament now, and they've got all this work on their plate. And the natives are restless. Everybody wants U.S. consumer prices. They're prepared to migrate across the border like lemmings or Canada geese. They'll go in herds. And the evil, I call the Bob Ray government evil. You know, they're actually trying to get the feds to seal the border, turn this into Fortress Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
And they're actually saying that in front, you know. But the people are wise to it, and the people even have a good sense of humor about it. And I get the feeling that, well, I don't have to talk about this. We all know it. The people are going to shake their tree, right?
Yeah.
So the real question, one of the real questions that's going to proceed, and it's going to come before this fall, even more interesting than the Gulf War, if you could consider that interesting, which is probably a bad thing to say.
Yeah.
But the shape of the new Canada, you know?
Yeah.
The shape of the new planet.
Bob's territory.
And ours, all, you know?
Yeah.
The discarnate electronic hordes up here, you know, they're all mildly interested in this, but the actual structure, how much of a new world are we going to see? All the brave new worlds of the past were miserable reflections of previous dreams. You know, Aldous Huxley says, they're going to drug you and condition you and use your babies for weird purposes. I mean, where have we heard that before, you know? And this was like, this isn't a brave new world, but We're gonna get a brave new world, and you should go back and read Marooned in Real Time again.
Yeah.
The guy said, by the triple and the quadruple exercise of their imagination, the human race made themselves disappear in 70 years, and when the guy woke up from his cold sleep, he looked around and there was only about 500 people left. Amazing.
Yeah.
And he migrated down time and he couldn't find them. Coming out every 1,000 years, they weren't there.
I said that in my Not magazine interview. There wouldn't be many people in Toronto in 100 years.
But that book, Marooned in Real Time, has practically got the status of a holy office. You know?
Okay, we're going to deal with that now. Thanks for the probes. We're giving you extra time. I think we better go to
good,
another call.
I just wanted to say that was good, The Exorcist.
Thank you.
Okay.
I predicted you'd like it, didn't I?
Well, yeah, but remember, Bush is basically, he's our buddy there, you know. He's got reserve, and he'll speak carefully. Remember Henry Fonda in that movie where they had to bomb New York? What was it, The Fire Next Time or something? You know, it was, you know, where they exchanged atom bombs?
Okay, you bring up that next show.
It was, yeah, you know what I'm talking about, the nuclear war that never happened. The president that has to sit there and say, okay, sucker, drop the bomb on me, I got it coming. You know, and he pushes the button. That was good, you know.
Okay.
Bush has got that kind of quality. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Doug.
Good prose by Doug. Metaphysical and practical.
and other stuff and crazy.
Okay, we got another caller.
We have a caller?
Yeah, hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question for you.
Thank you.
Was anyone surprised by the revelation of details about Operation October Surprise?
Were we surprised?
Yeah.
Well, I caused it, and then I got LaRouche to write about it. I knew about it 8 years, 9 years ago. So.
Well, this author of that book was a LaRoucheite, wasn't she?
No. She was a Mae Brusselite. Now, you can hear her speaking on Hans Bergschmidt show in 2 weeks. Not this Monday, but the next Monday, 11 to 12 in the morning on CIUT. I'm not promoting it, but I'm just telling you, I've heard the first part of the speech. And she talks about what she was doing in 87, 88, and she doesn't mention Mae Brussel at all. This is suspicious. Here's Mae Brussel starting to die of cancer in that period. And Barbara Honecker worked in Mae Brussel's files for 6 months. And used a lot of it, and she doesn't give any acknowledgement in her speech. Now, I don't think there's any acknowledgement in her book either. She does acknowledge LaRouche's EIR, but she's not a LaRouche.
Oh.
She's an electric autonomous. She's on her own trip.
Well, what kind of trip was she on when she was in the White House?
That's a good question.
Another question.
She's not totally, don't fall completely for her scenarios.
No, I don't.
Good.
Shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Another question. Do you think we had any interesting surprises during the 1988 federal election in Canada?
Did we have any?
Yeah.
Was there an election?
There were polls taken.
Yeah, that's about it. There's a fine line between the Pollstergeist and the Zeitgeist. Difference between the pollster and the Zeit, you figured out.
Well, there was
which geist are we dealing with?
There was a free trade bill passed after the polls were taken.
Really?
Yeah.
And so what do you want to say about it?
Well, I just want to know if you have any insights on how that election went.
There wasn't any. That's my insight.
Well, it certainly wasn't much of an exercise in democracy, I'll grant you that.
No, and you can't have democracy under electric conditions. There hasn't been democracy for 70, 80 years. Hitler was the first one to take advantage of the electric age. There hasn't been any democracy. So don't try to demand it under electric conditions. You're not going to get it.
So what's going to happen the next time they take polls?
We're going to take the polls and send them to Germany, I guess. No, but what do you mean the next time that they take polls 24 hours a day? That is
on
his estimate.
How long is he going to hang in there?
He'll be gone by September. I predicted on CBC on January 1st.
Yeah.
He's going. And we're going to have a coalition government with Kretschmann and his titular head, and it'll be you'll have the Reform Party in there, the Bloc Party, the NDP, the Liberals, they'll all be jumped in there, and a lot of the conservatives will have left the party.
Well, I heard there was a big protest against the Reform Party last night in Toronto, and there were more protesters than there were adherents.
Well, that'll happen in Ontario. Ontario is a basket case in this situation. Ontario is like the master. The master is always too dependent on the slave. The slave controls the master, and the slave is taking over, and Ontario is going to suffer. You know what I mean? Any perception coming out of Toronto as that Dublin is explaining will not be relevant to what's happening in the majority of Canada, the rest of the slaves of Ontario.
Aren't you in Toronto?
Nope. I'm discarnate. I'm everywhere at once. I run the solar government. Maybe you don't know about that. I'm usually 20,000.
Yeah,
you don't believe it. It's true. We're going to announce the AIDS cure pretty soon.
Good. About time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
So I think we should end, Wayne.
Yep.
Yeah. What is it, 10 after 2? I don't want to go into this guy's show too much.
Okay, it's getting on. We did have one last tape to play, did we not?
Oh, we have the theme song. I mean the outro. The outro, the music, fun and games, you know, feel good. So side one. So thanks a lot, Wayne, for letting me on again.
Okay.
Of course, in these tough times, I have to operate in a more surreptitious manner and not available, that much. So, but you let me in here once a month and.
Well, we're just getting people prepared and getting them ready for a total turn off. You know.
Yeah.
Turn off, drop out.
That's right. We're going to have to go against Bobby Seale's mandate and drop out. We actually are going to do it, but we're going to take the technology with us. That's the point. You can't drop out as a figure without a ground. You got to take the ground, the electric environment with you when you drop out. The hippies didn't realize that. Okay, I hope you didn't start it. We got to rewind.
Rewind.
Yep.
Adam and Susan on the violin. From Poor Dog Pondering, and you're listening to CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto.